It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In just a few days ago, after 30 years with the organization, Jill June retired as president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. Now, in her tenure with Planned Parenthood, Jill June guided the organization through multiple mergers, consolidations, and expansions, all of which resulted in what we know as Planned Parenthood of the Heartland now. It's an organization that encompasses 21 health centers across 4 states. She joins us live this half hour to reflect on her work and the societal changes she has witnessed over 3 decades. Jill June, welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you so much for letting me be your guest. I'm a fan of this show, and it's a real honor to be on your program.
Thank you very much for those kind words. I want to reach out to River to River listeners. Join our conversation with your question or comment for Jill June, 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Our email, you can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Jill, on Monday, in a 5-4 decision, the High Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, ruled that closely held for-profit companies can use religious objections to avoid paying for some contraception coverage required under the Affordable Care Act. How does that ruling affect Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, if at all?
Well, first, let me say that many, many women are terribly upset about this ruling. I also need to say that, as you mentioned, I'm retired from Planned Parenthood now. This is day 3 of my retirement.
Okay.
And so I'm not an official spokesperson for the organization, but I do have a strong opinion of my own. And I think that nobody wants their boss deciding what kind of health care or what kind of contraceptive is best for them. People just resent that automatically, that your employer would be able to dictate that to you. But this court ruling really was a big shock to people who prize religious liberty. It's certainly fine for each person to have their own viewpoint about contraception. But when your viewpoint, religious or not, gets to impose upon mine, that's where most people draw the line.
Mm-hmm.
Now it seems that, you know, only it's corporations, only very wealthy individuals own corporations that employ thousands of people. So it really seems like the 1% now has an extra added advantage when it comes to their religious viewpoint about women's contraception. And
But the plaintiffs in this case would say this is a win for religious liberty, that they shouldn't have to pay for types of contraception that they'll go against their religious beliefs. And after all, this is a company that they closely hold in a legal sense, and they don't want it to go against their religious beliefs, their monies.
But the rights of the individual person, in this case a woman, to make her own private medical decisions should not be made by her employer. Our country has stood on the principle that individuals, even though you may not agree with war, as an example, you still have to pay your taxes. We have a country based upon laws and the Constitution, and this ruling has really blurred the line. And I'm with Justice Ginsburg. I think that it has opened up a minefield that we can't possibly imagine today.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way to satisfy both sides in this case?
Well, the government has already provided a concession where if the employer does not want to, in the case of a religiously affiliated corporation, like a university, a religiously affiliated university, they may not want to provide the service.
Right.
But the government can have it provided within the insurance policy, and it becomes part of your insurance policy, even though your employer isn't paying the 2 cents or whatever premium that would represent in your policy.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another U.S. Supreme Court ruling within the last few days that concerns abortion services. And I know abortion services are only a small part of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland's business, a part that although makes news and is most controversial. Just a week ago, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a Massachusetts law that required that protesters stay behind a 35-foot buffer zone around entrances to abortion clinics. This unanimous decision ruled that the buffer zone violated protesters' First Amendment rights to free speech. Does this change anything in regard to the rules protesters in Iowa must follow outside of clinics, Planned Parenthood clinics? I don't even know. What are the laws here? Are they adequate?
To my knowledge, there are no buffer zones that are established in Iowa. But we have been very thoughtful as an organization in choosing the location of our health clinics, because nobody wants to have to pass through a bunch of, they call themselves protesters, but they're really harassers. They aren't just speaking their mind. They are trying to convince you and hammer you into listening to them and agreeing with them. So we found another solution other than relying on the law asking for a buffer zone. But there are many places in the country where that's not possible, where the clinic entrance sits right on the public sidewalk. And if somebody's standing there on that sidewalk screaming at you, it's very hard and very intimidating, and that's where the buffer zones came into play. The court, as I understand it, said 35 feet is too much, so I guess we'll have to see what is the right amount. The court, of course, itself has a much bigger buffer zone than 35 feet. And when dignitaries and highly elected officials come to visit, there are buffer zones in those situations as well. That's for the protection and the tranquility of those who want to be there. This was an unfortunate ruling. I was on staff at Planned Parenthood in the 90s, of course, when shootings occurred in Boston at a Planned Parenthood, and two women working in the front office were killed. A person ran in with a gun and shot up the clinic. And that's what these buffer zones were about, to keep people away. And if they start rushing into the clinic, you've got time to see that they're coming and you can lock the door.
Mm-hmm. Have you, in your tenure, felt under siege or threatened?
I had my share of threats. There was about an 18-month period where the federal marshals were actually guarding my office and would follow me around and follow me home for my safety. There were plenty of death threats. They were parked 24/7 in my parking lot. I personally have been assaulted by these so-called protesters.
Assaulted how?
I was pushed and bitten while I was trying to get away. Mm-hmm. And I've had my home invaded as well. So your listeners should not imagine a person quietly opposing a government rule or practice. It's not like it's a quiet, peaceful demonstration. These get to be very rowdy and very dangerous.
And yet you stayed, despite what you just described and many other instances, you've stayed with the organization, committed to its mission. What makes you stay? Because I imagine anyone in that position would have second guesses about the calling that they're on.
The protesting would be aimed at us, and again, I use that word very generously, that deepened my resolve about standing up for the families that we served. We made promises to the people in our communities that we would provide excellent care at a cost they could afford, and that we would be for them, we would be there for them no matter what. And so keeping that promise meant a great deal to me. And so I'm not going to permit this kind of distraction to veer me from my course and to take me from the promise that I personally made, as well as what the organization made to the men and women of our communities.
If you've just joined us, Jill June is my guest. Jill just said 3 days ago, retired after 30 years of service with Planned Parenthood, former president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. Jill, your agency, your former agency, I guess I need to say now, is currently involved in a legal tangle over its use. And during your tenure, certainly you had a lot to do with this, over its use of the first in the nation video conferencing system that allows Planned Parenthood doctors in Des Moines or Iowa City to dispense abortion pills to patients in outlying clinics. Now, the Iowa Board of Medicine determined last year that the system did not ensure patients' safety. Planned Parenthood contended the ruling was a blatant attempt to limit rural women's access to abortion. And I understand that the board's ruling is on hold while the two sides debate the matter in court. What is at stake in this court ruling?
Well, it's an outright attack on what's commonly referred to as telehealth or telemedicine. It's the use of new technologies to connect a doctor and a patient across many miles. It is certainly championed by our major universities throughout the nation as a way of bringing down the cost of health care while at the same time assuring that women and men have access to specialty care, children as well. The University of Iowa in particular is a very big promoter of telehealth and telemedicine. And there are all kinds, for a very long time, as an example, telemedicine has been used to provide mental health care because of the psychiatrist shortage, and where patients can talk to their psychiatrist long distance, and the long distance psychiatrist can prescribe medications. So it's a great program. It's a wonderful idea. It adds to reducing the cost of health care. Everybody's for it, except when it comes to women seeking abortion.
So why did the Iowa Board of Medicine determine it did not ensure patients' safety? What is behind that in your view?
I think that this is just a complete bias and bogus attack on Planned Parenthood and the services that we provide using telehealth. The Board of Medicine conducted no investigation when they issued this rule. A year earlier, I guess it was 2 years earlier, the board did conduct a full investigation, complete with unannounced surprise visits to our health centers and a year-long review of our operations and our medical records, and they found no fault whatsoever with the program. It got, you know, the good housekeeping seal of approval. But a new board was appointed by Governor Branstad, and again, without so much as asking one question, reviewing the old investigation materials or conducting their own investigation, they declared it to be improper. And I am so convinced that this is a biased ruling, and they used their power in a way that is contrary to the public good. And if they would apply this ruling to telemedicine across the board and not just aim it at women, there would be an outcry throughout the state of Iowa, because this really is nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Do you expect a different ruling when the court has its say?
Well, I can't predict. I've learned a long time ago that you cannot predict. You just trust in the wisdom of the judge and the skills of the attorneys representing you, and the fact that your case is complete and accurate and well stated, and then it is up to the courts to decide.
Jill June, recently retired president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, with us for another few minutes. In 2002, Jill, you were nearly arrested, I understand, after you refused to disclose confidential patient information to prosecutors in Storm Lake. This part of an investigation into the death of an abandoned newborn. It was a case that received some national attention, and as a result, you were honored as one of Ms. Magazine's Women of the Year. I wonder, in that case, how isolated is a case like that? Or are these things something you faced every day or every week in your tenure with Planned Parenthood?
Well, in the Storm Lake situation, the county prosecutor was given approval by the judge to seize our medical records of every woman who tested positive for a pregnancy test over a 9-month period. It was a dragnet of medical records. And no, I had never encountered anything like that since before or since that happened. There are times when a medical record is subpoenaed, but it is an individual person. It is not just a, you know, your entire clinic of patients over a certain period of time. And we are happy to cooperate. And in this case in particular was tragic circumstances, and we wanted very much for the perpetrator to be brought to justice. But what they were asking us to do was wrong, to turn over the medical records of every woman in town like that. And so we said no. And the threats did come on a daily basis by telephone and by fax. So they were about to arrest me, and I was really quite surprised about that. As it all turned out for the best, the prosecutor and the judge withdrew their demands, and the investigation went on without dragging through our medical records.
Whether it's this legal threats, threats from law enforcement, or threats from other sources, where did you learn in your life, Jill June, to stand up, hold your ground? Do you look back to a person?
You know, I know exactly where. It started with my parents. I was born very shortly after World War II, and I began questioning as I grew up. We were a lucky family. We had a TV set in the late 40s and early 50s, and I began learning about World War II and what happened in Germany, and I was asking my folks about how that Holocaust could have ever happened. And so we had lots of conversations about really standing up for what's right and fighting against what's wrong. And then my mother suggested that I read Anne Frank's diary. And it was published, you know, when I was young, but I was a vociferous reader. And I read her diary, and I have reread it a couple of times in my life. It's something I hold very close to my heart. And, you know, she's always said, isn't it wonderful that it's anybody can do anything to make the world a better place? And so I took my inspiration from Anne Frank and what she had stood up against. And it was a rewarding way to live my life, I will say that.
Mm-hmm. In 2012, the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation attempted to withdraw funding to Planned Parenthood for mammograms, and it was an action we reported here widely. It prompted a huge controversy, a backlash against Komen, the Komen Foundation, leading to a significant decline in donations and event participation for that organization. In fact, Komen has yet to fully recover from that. What do you see as the takeaways from that episode?
I think, you know, that was a very sad situation that Komen allowed politics to stand in the way of their mission. I think that's what happened with women. I mean, I knew that women that were supporters of Planned Parenthood, women who were patients of Planned Parenthood, would be very offended by that. What I didn't know is how offended the women who were, devoted to the Komen Foundation. I didn't know that they would be just as offended. And of course they were, because we really are sister organizations, and we are very joined in this struggle against cancer and the struggle for reproductive rights. So you just have to put your mission first as a nonprofit organization always, and stand your ground in for what you believe in, and not allow the politics of the situation to stray you from your mission, and because your donors and supporters expect that of you. That goes back to what I said earlier in the program about keeping your promise, keeping your word. Planned Parenthood is an organization that struggles every day because of funding. We serve low-income women, and for the most part, corporations and the government are very, very eager to provide financial support so that low-income people can have health care. In our case, we face a lot of discrimination. Corporations are oftentimes afraid to grant us money, and the government sometimes can be our enemy and will shut us down if given the chance. So we depend on local people and the communities around us to provide that support. And so keeping our word, keeping the trust, that is everything to us. And so and we are able to deliver the care because of the generosity of people living in our communities.
Jill June, we have less than a minute left. Quickly, what do you see as the greatest challenges for Planned Parenthood going forward now that you're 3 days out of the president and CEO seat?
Well, I think just what I talked about, assuring that people understand how valuable their volunteerism and their financial contributions are. We have been struggling for almost 100 years now to provide sexuality education and access to reproductive health care, and it has not gotten any easier over that 100 years, and I would predict it's not going to get any easier in the near future. So that financial support means everything to us.
Quickly, what are your personal plans for retirement? What do you want to do now that you don't have that work there for you every day?
Well, of course, I'll continue to be an advocate and a donor to Planned Parenthood. I am looking right now and judging some volunteer opportunities that have been presented to me. I have a very close family and a very loving husband, so I'm sure we'll take some time to travel, and we both garden, and we're both interested in cooking. I do everything from quilting to cheese making, so
well,
I'll be busy.
Good luck with that. Do keep busy. Jill June, recently retired president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the Heartland. Thank you for coming into our AIM studio.
Thank you for having me.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Claire Roth. Jason Burns helped us out in Ames today. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. You want to tune in Monday for this program. We'll find out where your trash goes. Do you think about it? Do you care? We'll kick off our summer environmental series both on River to River and at Talk of Iowa, on Talk of Iowa at 10 o'clock. We hope you'll tune in. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Special programming tomorrow for the 4th of July holiday. Talk to you again on Monday. Thanks for joining us.